Take an evening jog along the coastal town of Treasure Island, say from Sunset Beach to John's Pass. Along the way, you'll see pelicans, oil-free, tiny purple shells lining the shore, also sans crude, and a bold blue expanse of salt water, with no oil or tar balls to speak of. But tell that to someone in Germany who could just as well book a trip to Cabo, says Cerrada Beach Resort President Greg Nicholas.
The sheer volume of calls has dropped considerably, and it's going to get worse as particularly the Florida name and the association with oil becomes more part of the headline rather than the headline saying that we're open. So hopefully the journalism here is one that's going to be responsive to that.
Nicholas says he's already filed a claim to recoup some of the lost revenue due to impressions that all of Florida's beaches are oiled. Therein, says Tampa Bay Beach's Chamber of Commerce President Robin Grabowski, lies the problem.
I just answered an email just about 20 minutes ago from someone in Kentucky planning a visit here in late July. And their fear is, what should they do? Should they keep the reservation or should they come? They have no idea. They see the picture of Florida as one big giant state. They don't recognize that though we don't have oil, they hear the panhandle and that fear is statewide.
A drop in tourism, of course, also hurts fishermen who sell their catch to local markets and charter fishing trips. But with 37% of the Gulf closed off to fishing, Tampa Bay area fishermen and women are feeling the burn. Travis Palladino runs a fishing boat in Madeira Beach. He's a commercial fisherman who relies heavily on dollars from running a charter boat.
I take recreational. What I do is I do a charter business where I take four anglers out there. And like I said, we're fishing anywhere between 300 to 600 feet of water. As of this morning, my fishery's done. I've had to cancel every charter that I've had on the boats.
He said so far he's had to cancel 60 charter trips.
This was actually taking me through the whole summer. That's the bulk of my business is summertime business.
And what does this do to your business?
I've actually probably grossly have going to lose at least $130,000. And that's not also the people that were coming to stay in Madeira Beach, to the hotels, the restaurants.
Palladino said he thinks the government is shutting down fisheries arbitrarily and that he'd like to see better research.
I wish they would do proper research and have proper boats going out there before they start closing fishing areas, because it is affecting a lot of fishermen's business. The deep water commercial fisheries closed now. Those guys normally fish in 600 feet for yellow edge grouper. It's done. The deep water, the national marine fisheries, I haven't seen any oil up there. I would like to know where the national marine fisheries is coming up with these ideas of closing these waters without any proof that there's any oil or any problems with the fish out there.
Representatives from local environmental groups also had concerns about the quality of research. Michelle Simoneau of Suncoast Seabird Sanctuary, one of the response centers for oiled birds, told Castor she wanted to know more about chemical oil dispersants and their effect on wildlife.
We have no idea what this is going to do to our sea life and how it is going to affect immediately and even long-term for years to come.
The wide-ranging discussion went well beyond the question of how to tackle the disaster's economic and ecological short-term effects in Tampa Bay. Participants also talked about moving toward clean energy. U.S. Representative Kathy Castor said she wants to incentivize clean energy exploration on the part of power companies.
We've got to end the tax breaks that the oil companies have been receiving and instead turn those tax breaks into incentives for clean energy research. This is the Sunshine State. It was devastating to read this morning that TECO has abandoned its solar project in Polk County.
Darden Rice of the Gulf Restoration Network said one of the major roadblocks in that respect is the clout of industry lobbyists.
But there's a big reason why we haven't been able to achieve a clean energy plan in Tallahassee, and it's because of the special interest groups which are lobbying mightily against it. So I hope one of the takeaways here is that we can start to build some constructive bridges and work with these statewide groups.
Castor said she agreed and hopes to tackle that in the future. She also stressed the need to hold BP accountable and financially responsible for scientific research, cleanup, lost wages, and other costs associated with a disaster. She said meetings like this are vital in assessing such needs.
Well, it's not going to come from the top down. It's going to come from community business leaders, the small businesses and the hotels, restaurants, and shops. It's going to come from the fishermen. We had a number of folks today that spoke from their heart and told us exactly what the impact is on their families and folks that work for them. So that really helps drive the priorities.
Castor also wrote a letter to BP America head Lamar McKay requesting $100 million in funding for Florida's oil spill academic task force, a team of state university researchers charged with assessing numerous aspects of the worst oil spill that has ever happened in U.S. waters.
Some of the best cutting-edge research is happening right here at the University of South Florida at our College of Marine Science. They have been at the forefront sending out their vessels to collect water samples in the loop current and also in deep water. That must continue. We've got to continue to monitor the impact here.
Meanwhile, today BP officials announced they've managed to cut a pipe that's been gushing oil into the Gulf. But the cut is irregular, which means that capping the well may once again prove difficult. From St. Pete Beach, for WMNF News, I'm Kate Bradshaw.